So how was this plan, how was it sort of regarded in later times? Well, after the initial enthusiasm of the 1870s, in the 1880s it was actually had a pretty bad reputation. Vogel was often criticised because New Zealand's economy went into quite a deep recession. This was triggered by an international financial crisis, so it wasn't really of New Zealand's making, but a lot of people blamed Vogel for being overambitious and for borrowing too much and for fueling a sort of boom and bust cycle that was going to be unsustainable in the long term. But as prosperity sort of returned in the 1880s and 1890s, and the Liberal government of the 1890s launched their own public works schemes, and this is Richard Seddon, this is in 1906, turning the first site of a railway at Westport. And he was a great promoter of these sorts of things, partly to get the photo opportunities, to kind of garner votes in electorates. But the Liberals really saw Vogel as kind of one of their predecessors, and so he was again seen as a heroic sort of nation builder that the Liberals were kind of building on his earlier legacy. And the verdict of historians has tended to be equally positive. One of the first, not surprisingly, was, considering he was a Liberal politician, was William Pember Reeves, who hailed Vogel as, this is a quote, one of the short list of statesmen whose work has left a permanent mark on the Dominion, and praised his policy as, quote, virtually the beginning of state socialism in New Zealand. And to Reeves, state socialism was a great compliment. So the rail building that Vogel launched in 1870 and that carried on really till 1908 when the North Island Main Trunk was completed, which was really the pinnacle of the plan Vogel originally started, is possibly the most important thing the New Zealand government ever did, at least in the first century after the Treaty of Waitangi. And it was certainly its greatest financial commitment, because between 1870 and 1929, the government spent £52 million on rail construction. It's hard to put that into terms, but it would be at least $6 billion. But more importantly, it accounted for 48% of government's public works spending, which was more. So there's more spent on railways than on roads, telegraphs, public buildings, immigration, tourism, defence, lighthouses, harbour works, and mining put together. The chief beneficiaries, really, of this this revolution that began in 1870 were the new waves of European immigrants who came here. And the Europeans who lived in the main centres and the new towns that grew up along the railways, especially in the North Island, where all those towns in the central North Island were created by railways. And the new areas that were opened up for settlement. Now, not everyone benefited, of course. The Vogel program eventually, by 1908, had really broken open that Māori heartland of the central North Island, paving the way for European colonisation, a complete transformation of that world from a Māori world to a Pākehā one. And railways clearly accelerated Māori land loss. This, if we go back to 1860, is the Māori land, if you think about, I mean, there were no railways in the North Island at this stage. This is 1890. And the shrinking blue parts are shrinking away as railways are encroaching inland. And this is 1910, after the North Island Main Trunk Railway has been built. And if you compare that to the extension of railways, you can see there's a relationship there. So the lines are edging in from the coast, and they're sort of eating away at the edges of Māori land estate, and isn't they're slicing it up into chunks that can be digested by the government and settlers. Another casualty, really as much of New Zealand's natural environment, especially in the North Island, as railways accelerated the destruction of forests and swampland through forestry and flax milling, railways themselves, of course, heavy users of timber and coal mining. So they're really generating a whole economic process which is having a massive impact on the environment. And, of course, encouraging land to be turned into farmland. And what about Vogel himself? As I mentioned, his work in New Zealand's done, so he retires to England, as a lot of politicians did in those days, to live the life of an elder statesman. But his life takes another twist, and he becomes a science fiction writer, as very few of our politicians ever have. And he publishes this book in 1889. It's called Anno Domini 2000, and it's set in the year 2000. And he so in this world in the year 2000, he predicts that that women will hold all the highest posts in government, and that poverty would have been abolished. And in 2000, it was interesting that there was quite a bit of media attention about this a little bit at the time, that the book was republished, and at that time the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition, it's Helen Clark and Jenny Shipley, the Attorney General, the Chief Justice, the incoming Governor General, and the CEO of New Zealand's largest company were all women. And that caused a little flurry of excitement in Vogel's skill as a predictor of the future. But in the book, it's quite interesting. This is some of the other things he predicted, that Europe would become fully federated, probably an unlikely ambition, considering they had two massive world wars before they achieved any sort of federation. The news media and their interest in celebrity gossip exert considerable influence. There'd be a social welfare system, which is unheard of in 1889, providing comforts even for the poor, including subsidised accommodation and multi-storey buildings with elevators. Talks about labour-saving devices in the home. The electricity was a prime source of domestic heat. Of course, in 1889, it's very much coal, based around coal and gas. Air conditioning was unheard of. Hydroelectricity, people understood the technology, but there were no hydroelectric dams in New Zealand. Tourism, fishing and horticulture, none of which were major sources of, were really that important to New Zealand at the time. And to be a world-class wine producer was very far-fetched. The idea that industrial technology was making an impact on the environment, again, would have seemed far-fetched at a time when railways were still trying to build railways through the North Island, which many people saw as a wilderness, an endless sort of wilderness of forests. New Zealand's leader in Antarctic research. And this is a good one, because it's 16 years before the Wright brothers' first flight, but the air travel is universal, and aluminium air cruisers powered by quickly revolving fans. And there's instant communication technology in the form of the hand telegraph or noiseless telegraph, which we call an iPhone. And so that's quite a remarkable book that Vogel did, at the end of his late in his life. And it's sort of a period, it's periodically attracted a little bit of attention and alongside a lot of other books that have sort of predicted the future. And of course, they get as many things wrong as they get right. But he ended up having a pretty good record. So there was a final twist in a pretty amazing career of a guy who only spent 18 years in New Zealand, but the program that he led from 1870 in particular had a huge impact on New Zealand.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for and,